WMR, WMR, it's the way to make fast pages. It's a modern dev tool and it's pretty cool. If you like Preact, you'll love this. WMR, WMR, automatically import things. It's a modern dev tool and it's pretty cool. So let's learn more about it.
I think my nails are officially too long to play ukulele.
Nice.
Welcome to Tools Day, a podcast all about tech tools, tips, and tricks every other Tuesday at 2. I'm your co-host, Yuna.
And I'm Chris.
And today we're talking about
WMR.
Yay! And as you could hear, we have a guest on the show. We could not talk about this topic without him. We have Jason Miller. Woo!
Hello.
Welcome to the show, Jason! If you don't know Jason, he is awesome. He is the creator of Preact and now WMR, and my teammate at Google on the UX and runtime performance dev advocacy team. And he helped me launch Houdini.how and has just been an awesome teammate. So I'm very stoked to have him on the show and to talk about his new tool that I got to use and have a sneak peek at. And it's just like, I feel like I like simplicity. And I'm definitely not like a really big like JavaScript architecture person, like make it simple and make it work for me. And I loved this tool. So I think that means a lot. Before we get too far into it, I do want to say a shout out and thank you to today's sponsor, which is OutSystems. OutSystems is a modern application development platform that supports everything you need to build enterprise apps fast. OutSystems provides a visual development environment, powerful automation, and AI-assisted development. Dev teams can accelerate application development and deliver products in days and weeks instead of months and years. Using the OutSystems platform, developers can ensure their applications are secure, resilient, cloud-ready, mobile-friendly, and built to scale. Their platform can save you time and money as your application and business needs evolve. And getting started with OutSystems is easy. Sign up for your own free personal environment and you'll have your first app built in no time. Check that out at OutSystems/Toolsday, but I have to spell this one out. So it's OutSyste.ms/Toolsday. So it's OutSyste.ms/Toolsday. OutSyste.ms/Toolsday. It's a .ms domain. What is .ms?
Microsoft.
Maybe, probably not. Actually, that's
there's no other
fabrication.
Micronesia.
Micronesia. All right.
Some country.
Like .im is what I use. It's Isle of Man. So yeah. MS.
I'm gonna look this up.
We're probably something. Like really ignorant right now, not knowing.
How
what
do you
it
search
is
for a dot? Like Mississippi Department of Transportation.
MS domain.
Yeah.
MS.
Quick sidebar. Domain. One of my favorite parts of having guests on the show is watching their reactions to you singing the opening song. So I was like, what? This song's about my thing?
Yeah. Also, half of me, it's live?
Oh, yeah. We just do this take live, like minimal editing because we're lazy.
Yep. Used to do a lot more editing. And over time, I've been like, I don't feel like doing that anymore. Yeah,
it's a very high time investment.
In fact, if we're talking about tooling, I feel like our tooling has evolved to allow for less and less editing as well. Like, we used to record these in Adobe Audition, and now we're using TriCast. Shout out to TriCast.
Shout out to TriCast, yeah. No more audio syncing.
Yeah. So, Jason.
The drift.
Yes. Tell us a little bit about WMR. What does it mean? And where it comes from?
What? Why? How? When?
So the most important thing you need to know is that .ms is for Montserrat, which is British Overseas Territory.
Okay. Oh. And now I know what that font name means too. So this is nice.
I thought like Montserrat was.
And, it probably is. Yeah.
I knew it as a typeface, but this is very eye-opening to me.
I thought it was a rat-shaped Pokemon.
Oh well, also true.
Is there a dad joke counter somewhere here?
I don't see that.
I'm not even a dad.
No one's dad's here.
What did you ask me? I defined the wrong thing. WMR stands for web modules runtime, tentatively, or wet module reloading, where wet has no meaning. Yeah. At least no good meaning.
I did notice. So,
whatever you feel like it means.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah. Attribute your own meaning.
Yeah, I remember looking through the README, and I was like, is there a definition of what this acronym stands for? Like, no, it's fine. HMR, we're all kind of on the same page. It's something about web. It feels webby to me, so.
Wait, HMR is not hot module reloading?
No, it is. But like, okay. I saw WMR. I just assumed it's related to HMR, and I was like, good enough for me, and I didn't think much more about it.
But I don't know. So many that dev actually tools was originally have, the like, joke. A floating okay. name.
A floating?
This is like a floating name for WMR.
Like wet module reloading?
It's whatever you want it to be.
With a pirate theme.
Okay, so I'm curious. For the people who don't know what it is, could you kind of give us a quick like a elevator pitch on what it is and maybe what inspired you to build it?
Sure. So I'll do them two separately. So what it is a thing that feels like a static file server. You know, it's simple and intuitive and just sort of hosts the files that you have on disk. But it adds in support for JavaScript stuff that you wouldn't get from a static file server. So the obvious one there is it's an HTTP server. So you don't end up with the file:// URL problems. That's an easy one. The more important one is when you import stuff in your JavaScript, you can import NPM stuff. And it sort of looks and works just like as if you were bundling it, but it's not because it's sort of a static file server. That's sort of the gist of where it started. It's grown a little bit from there. That whole concept of like, it's just JavaScript files on disk with a bit of stuff. Now that bit of stuff has grown to include stuff that is not technically, you know, valid JavaScript, but is so widely used that it's really, really hard to do without it. So things like JSX or TypeScript types, being able to import CSS files. Yes, you know, the spec for that is there's work ongoing and it may not shape up to look exactly like this, but you know, 98% of projects are using it. So a tool that doesn't support it wouldn't go very far. So it's kind of trying to meld the simplicity of, you know, Python-M simple HTTP server and something you can actually use for a production application. And where that started was I use Glitch a lot, okay. You know, in and amongst other tools, but mostly Glitch at this point. And Glitch has free static file hosting, which painfully doesn't support any of the things that I need from it. you know, it's very good at hosting static files, but unfortunately in my head, when I think that I'm relying on static files, what I actually need is JSX, and probably importing stuff from NPM in a way that actually works. So, you know, WMR actually started out life as a node server that I was dragging around from project to project on Glitch that was basically just their glorified static file server with JSX handling and NPM handling.
Oh.
And so interestingly, you can see, you know, as we sort of crawl through the feature list, oh, like that's obviously a feature that is in there because it's really convenient when you're on Glitch, like streaming NPM dependencies and stuff.
To me, this felt like a very like minimalist way to use components with Preact. And I feel like that's something that I'm always looking for, just like a component-based environment with Preact and CSS modules that doesn't require a lot of finagling.
Yeah, I'm anti-config. And I wear that on my sleeve. I love to be able to configure things, but I'm a super distractible person. I have ADHD and other conditions that just make it so like, as soon as there's a roadblock, like me having to go and reach into another tool before I can start doing my own work, I'm out.
Yeah. Spend half the day researching plugins.
Why? Yeah. Webpack configs.
Or any tool for that matter. But like,
yeah, sorry. You know, not like, to become Webpack.
There's just too much stuff between you and getting an end result. I need a fast feedback loop. That's why I end up on Glitch in the first place.
Yeah. So when I scrolled through the feature list, you know, to me, my first impression, this sits somewhere alongside the tools like Parcel or Snowpack. And so I'm kind of curious from your perspective, when should someone reach for WMR versus one of those other tools?
So that's actually very tough. Parcel is the easy one to answer. So Parcel is a bundler, you know, capital B bundler. When it serves files on the web, they've already been bundled. That's a design decision. It's a trade-off. So we, you know, I'm not here to say that there's one right answer there. Parcel does it one way, WMR does it the other way. WMR doesn't bundle your code, it just does that direct file serving. And so that trade-off kind of gives them different performance characteristics. Parcel, if you have an enormous tree of source files, if you have thousands and thousands of source files, if the time it takes to compile all those source files in response to an initial build and then subsequently a change is smaller than the time it would take to load them all using independent HTTP requests, Parcel's faster. Mm-hmm. If you have fewer source files than that, or you have lighter compilation, minimal JSX, minimal TypeScript, et cetera, you might be in the camp of folks where actually just streaming all the modules concurrently over HTTP2 is faster.
Right.
Bundling it won't make that faster in development. And that's the camp that WMR serves. It tends to do really, really, really well for small stuff, for prototyping things, for applications that don't necessarily have like a set page structure, or right, they're just using a client-side router, not like a bunch of HTML pages. So there's no like entry points to, yeah, to have.
Entry point.
Right, yeah, yeah. Or the entry points are implicit, right? Like in WMR's development mode, it doesn't actually even know about your HTML files, never reads them off disk except to just serve them, to the point where you could run WMR on some port and then build a PHP website that just hits WMR by referencing it via a script tag, and it will all just work as if you were using WMR for the whole thing, including hot module replacement and all that stuff. So that's the key there is the bundling versus non-bundling.
Gotcha.
One of the, like, the most unique features of this that I experienced was I could just import a package from NPM without going to the package.json and adding it and then importing it. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, I'll preface this with, like, I get it. That's totally a foot gun. That scared the bejesus out of some people on.
Well, it's only that way in development, right? When it bundles to production, it actually manages all your packages.
You have all of that power. So if you are using WMR and you have a repo that has dependencies in the package.json, you can git clone the repo and run WMR build or npx WMR build without having ever run npm install, and you will get a build. It will suck them down from npm, which maybe that's creepy.
I thought it was cool.
Yeah, and the fact of the matter is, yeah, like we use the same plugin in dev and prod to handle dependencies, so we didn't want to turn it off. It would be kind of pointless. The thing that was maybe missing from documentation and that helps clarify this for some people is you don't have to put it in package.json, but you can. And so if you put versions in there, it uses the same semver evaluation stuff as npm, and it will respect that. Additionally, if you use npm install or yarn add or yarn or whatever it is, it will just use whatever you put on disk. But if you don't do those two things, the first time you import a module, you know, it sends a request to the server for, you know, like at npm slash whatever auto-generated from your import, it will go out to the npm registry directly and fetch the tarball for that module, whatever the determined release version is, by checking the pacument. I don't know why they call it that. Grabs a tarball, and it actually, as it is extracting the files out of the tarball, it filters out stuff that we know isn't source code. It's just like non-addressable stuff, test directories, build files, et cetera, et cetera. And it will only write things to disk that it thinks are going to be referenceable from your app. So it ends up, it produces a fairly lean node modules directory, but it is the same structure in node modules that NPM would produce. And the cool thing is, if you're importing just the main entry, you know, if you're importing, Lodash is a terrible example for this, but just, you know.
Conceptually,
yeah. If you were importing Lodash slash get, I'm showing, I never actually use Lodash, but if you're using like Lodash slash get, as soon as that get module and all of its dependencies have passed through the streaming tarball downloader, which it streams over the network and through the untar process, as soon as all of its prerequisites are available, that gets served to the browser and you can use the module. It doesn't actually have to be done downloading the package.
Interesting.
Which ends up being actually kind of useful, right? If you have these like large mega packages, like some of the material design libraries, like they might be 20 megs. But yeah. And so it gets into some fuzzy territory because like the ordering of that tarball is some degree of randomness. I tried to heckle the NPM folks to change it, but yeah.
That would simultaneously make testing faster and also potentially break tests.
Yeah. So the randomness of going out to the directory each time was something we hit. I had a project that I was using this in, and I didn't specify any dependencies in the package.json. I was just streaming them from NPM. And somebody did a Semver major update that I wasn't accounting for, and it just broke. Just one day I visited the site and it broke. So we don't technically do anything to like safeguard against that if you don't tell us what version you're using. You know, maybe printing something to the terminal might be useful there. But for now, we've basically said you should probably still use the package.json. Like in VS Code, if you're editing a package.json, it'll auto-suggest the version. I usually do that, and then I reload my app or let it hot reload in the browser, and it will just use whatever version was in the package.json. Gotcha. And that way you've got it there as sort of a safety measure.
So just to clarify from my perspective, the recommendation is basically for safety is that you add it into your package.json. You don't need to run npm install.
Right.
It will still stream it for you, but you'll have the guarantee of the whatever Semver number you've mm-hmm. pinned or you've put into your package.json file.
Yeah, the npm install thing, I think the most useful case for that or the yarn is if you want to use package lock files, like if you have a CI setup that depends on them, then I would just say, maybe edit your package.json and use the streaming install as you're developing. But when you're going to commit, run the install to update your package lock, because we never touch the package lock.
Yeah. I have a lot of opinions about package lock files.
recently on board, because they used to be such a pain in the butt
there
for NPM
so
merges.
Bad.
And now there's NPM merge driver, which this has solved most of my issues, and I usually don't end up hand merging package.jsons anymore. But it's the couple times a year that I have to that I'm thinking, this isn't worth it.
Okay, but why does everyone hate package lock? And everyone's like, oh, yarn lock? Great.
Oh, I hate yarn lock.
Okay, it's the same.
I think for a while they were both bad, but NPM was worse in terms of how a file is resolved between your package.json, your package lock, and what does NPM install actually mean? And so you couldn't rely on basically anything, and you were just sad. Yarn was a bit more consistent. It was still not great, but it was at least consistent. And so that's kind of where that comes from.
Well, NPM had shrink wrap and package lock, which were semi-compatible.
But not really. It was just just a mess.
I think that's all fixed
shrink
now,
wrap.
But
the bad taste remains.
So. I'm perpetually 3 years behind on tech. So I don't know whether that's like something you would alarm people, but
you're perpetually,
my opinions are old.
You're like perpetually 3 years behind and 3 years ahead at any given time. There is no present day.
It's so hard to live in the present.
So do you want to tell us about a few more features for WMR?
Sure. So we covered the streaming auto install thing. I touched on the entry points thing. This was a sore spot for me. Just again, I don't like config. And I don't like, building an application and having everything seem sort of nice and cut and dried and having the bundler be sort of a boxed off on its own concern. And then having to go into the bundle and be like, oh, yeah, but I have these six pages that matter. That just feels like crossing a weird line for me. So in WMR, during development, we don't care about your HTML files. And during production, we find them. We scan the disk and find them. And if they're not there, we'll generate them. So that's one. You just never had to configure that stuff. The way that works is you use script type module and you pretend everything is just plain old HTTP server. We'll do the rest. So that's nice. During development, as I mentioned, it's not bundled, which is actually the similarity with Snowpack. Mm-hmm. So we don't bundle your source code. If you have a file called foo.tsx, it'll be foo.tsx in the browser. It will contain TypeScript, but not your types. They'll just be replaced with spaces.
Right.
But in the case of NPM dependencies, if you import something from NPM, the file that gets served in the browser is actually a compiled, optimized version of the thing that you imported, whether it was the package itself or like a sub package inside of that or a path or a CSS file. So those get really, really, really quickly bundled and minified, really quickly bundled and comments removed, I think. And those get cached to disk. And then in the background, we'll serve that file. It has basic gzip compression on the fly. So the first time you load it, it's decently optimized, but it's not perfect.
Right.
The second time you load it, In the background, WMR will have gone off and rebundled it again with a much more aggressive configuration and run it through Terser, and also pre-generated a Brotli compressed version of that module, whatever it happened to be, and written that back to disk. So the next time you request that module, whether it's in this session or, you know, when you restart WMR or your computer, it will just serve those bytes from disk at no cost. So that ends up being really nice, because if you're in a situation where you're doing unbundled development, you want to basically leave as much room for your source code as you can.
Yeah.
And so we essentially take your dependencies, and after a little bit of time, they're pretty much running in production mode minus any flags they may have. Yeah. And the reason for that is actually really specific. I have constantly butted up against, you know, both in my work at Google and in my prior work on product teams, this problem where development was an unrelated environment to production. There was essentially no relationship between the two. You couldn't trust anything from one in the other. Stack traces were completely different.
All the work.
Yeah, essentially. So like, test it here. Okay, does it work? Now, does a completely different code base work over in this other environment? And then, you know, and there's always awkwardness because, like, our dev tools are less good at cross-browser compatibility. You know, like, we're depending on socket connections and maybe not transpiling quite as much. So you can't really do cross-browser testing during development. So you're doing it in production, but that's a different environment.
Yeah.
It's just a mess.
I think I've run into the issue where Terser, you know, just ruins it in prod, but dev is always fine. So that's kind of a nice little touch right there.
I'm always baffled when this happens, where, like, locally it works great, and then for some reason in prod, it's completely broken. Like, the website just is completely broken. I feel like this happens not infrequently, and it's the most annoying thing to debug.
I mean, there's a tooling complexity problem here, right? Yeah. Like, we have, and this actually touches on the other piece of why at least I was interested in WMR, is in the average project, right, in like a Create React app install, and this is not to disparage Create React app. It's a great piece of software, but it is bringing together something like five or more different AST formats, let alone traversers. It has at least one bundler. You know, there is how many thousands of files on disk, and those are all creating value. But the sum of that system as something that you could potentially reason about or have intuition for, that's not really a possibility, right? Like, I've been working with Webpack since I don't even know what version early 1.x releases, and I was the Webpack guy at multiple companies. You know, that's not to pump myself up. There's still tons about Webpack I don't know. I still need to brush up on. No, I was the guy who maintained the 5,000 line Webpack.
There's always somebody who gets
there's
the
always
own
a guy.
Of,
yeah, and then when Webpack. You leave, it's like that's the real meat of your transition plan.
They're still like pinging you.
What do these flags mean in our Webpack dot, you know, whatever?
I open sourced a chunk of mine just to ease the transition.
I mean, if you've ever ejected from CRA, you can kind of see how absolutely complex their configuration is for Webpack.
That's Chris's fancy acronym for Create React App.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. It is something to behold.
Yep. And so, like, to me, for production, maybe that's more justifiable, right? Like, same as, I'm going to butcher this because I don't actually really use Go, but like, I think in Go, there's an interpreted mode and a compiled mode. And the compiled mode is maybe less aggressively trying to give you a perfect developer experience. It's just trying to produce the absolute best possible output. But then there's a whole separate mode for development that is easier to debug and, you know, runtime inspectable and stuff. And I kind of wanted to, you know, see if there was another approach we could take that would get us a little bit more towards that. And so, like, with WMR, that's actually the real reason why we don't bundle during development. We had a third mode. There, you know, we have prod dev, and we had, like, a prod dev. We never had a proper name for it. Pretty awful, actually.
Yeah.
But I take the blame for that. But it was a bundled with roll-up, but development, live reload, hot module replacement enabled mode. And, you know, coming up towards the release in September timeframe, we were all kind of looking at the code base thinking, like, I haven't used this in months. I don't really understand why anyone would. Why don't we just cut it? You know, as long as we are confident that, you know, the unbundled version serves the majority of use cases, I don't think it's worth the complexity.
Makes sense to me.
Mm. Yeah. I skipped a bunch of features.
let's go back and get them.
Sure. So, like, the obvious one is hot module reloading. This was another kind of personal thing that I wanted to investigate. And then we've got a bunch of other folks on the team, like Jovi, who have just sort of, you know, gone off the deep end trying to figure out what is the state of the art for this. And he's actually working, he maintains Prefresh, which is our React integration. For React Refresh or whatever, which is its own whole independent project, but it has integrations for every bundler, including Snowpack and Vite and all these things. So he's very much in the know for hot module replacement. And what I wanted to do with WMR was use native ES modules unmodified, no wrappers, no export tracking and that kind of stuff, and find a way to like overwrite the browser's module records with new export references when they come in. And so we mostly managed to do that. We are doing a little bit of now dependency tracing on the client, interestingly, not on the server, because we can amortize that cost better on the client. But by and large, the way that hot module replacement works in WMR is we request a new copy of the module from the server. And that's not fancy. We literally put a timestamp in the URL. it works.
It works.
Yeah, we request it, and we pretty much just object.assign it over the old module record. You know, and then there's like a little API. We have roughly the same API as Snowpack and Vite, and I believe Modern Dev Server. For, you know, handling those updates in a specific way for your application if you want that.
So that is sort of like a gotcha where this is, it requires like modern JavaScript. And I believe there is a way to transpile it, but that's part of what keeps it so small is that it uses modern JavaScript techniques in the browser. What the browsers, you know, what evergreen web browsers, modern web browsers can support.
Yeah, and so WMR out of the box, because we were shooting for that tiny, I never said, it's 2 megabytes, one file, and a package JSON. There's no dependencies. And that's part of the reason why we don't transpile stuff for specific browser support by default. We are what if you applied the Pareto principle to everything? and hoped it was more 90-10 than 80-20.
I'm curious, do you expect people to like their first step? Oh yeah, but I actually need Babel. Or what is it? What's your expectation around that?
In prod, absolutely. And that was the first plugin I wrote. So there is a plugin that, and this was also kind of an exercise to see how does this all work? I now have a Webpack plugin that does the same thing in general purpose Webpack configs. But what this does is it runs WMR's production build, assuming everything is modern. And then just before it's going to write those bundles to disk, it takes them, it creates an ES2017 version of each and an ES5 version of each and a polyfills chunk that the ES5 version depends on and writes those to disk instead. And cleverly, it doesn't need to have Babel's entire dependency tree on disk, which we know is it's a general purpose tool. It does a lot of stuff, so it's somewhat large. It's just using Babel standalone, which is like 268 kilobytes and there's no dependencies.
But so
the plugin, when you install it, just does that.
Couldn't this introduce some issues like we just chatted about with development and prod? Because you are doing transformations when you're building to prod that you're not experiencing in development.
Yeah, so that's part of the reason why it's a plugin. There is one sort of hidden benefit nugget there, and this is more of a general thing that applies to that technique of transpiling the bundles. The delta in transpilation between what you wrote and those ES2017 bundles, which are shipped to 95% of browsers via script type module, is extremely small. It's not really polyfilling very much. It's not injecting Core.js. The huge things that really change the behavior of your source, like regenerator or, class transforms, any sort of scope changes, arrow functions. It's not doing any of that because that's all supported perfectly fine in ES2017. Mm-hmm. It uses the Babel preset. It uses Babel preset ENV with the bug fixes option that I introduced last year. And so it, by and large, it's going to look pretty much the same as your source. It'll like, if you used with what?
Yeah, no, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, there's like a couple of little things that if they're really new and you use them, it will transform class fields, class property initializers. What's the other the
question mark thing?
Yeah, I can't remember the name.
Optional
chaining. Yeah, yeah, nullish coalescing and optional chaining.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It'll put those in there.
I think of the question mark thing.
Yeah. I can never remember the name of that.
That's the only way I know it.
You know, it's probably in some other language in the 60s, and we're just stuck with that name until time dies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it'll do those things, and those are really straightforward. Like, here's your source. We duplicated it twice, created an intermediary variable, still, you know, on the same line. Basic stuff. We still use as classes. It just adds stuff for the fields. So it's not going to be doing much loop unrolling and that kind of stuff. In the caveat that makes this all work, though, is in the ES5 versions that get served to older browsers via script no module, we actually use non-loose mode Babel. Not spec mode. Spec mode is fairly aggressive. That's for debugging mostly. We use regular mode Babel, which is sort of strict, which is not super common if you're only transpiling once because it's kind of large. But these bundles are only for older browsers. And so it's more important that they're correct than that they're tiny.
Yeah.
So I think, like, stepping far enough back, you can sort of see a world where, like, you definitely would want to pay attention to this in cross-browser testing, but it's also kind of tuned to minimize the possibility that we're going to be doing something that's breakage, right? You mentioned the terser thing. Like, we're not doing aggressive minification on those bundles. We're doing lightweight kind of non-structural things.
Right.
So my hope is, like, you still have a high degree of parity there, and you can turn it on and off because it's a plugin.
Yeah. Nice. So we're running quite low on time. I'm kind of curious. If someone wants to get started, where do they go? And any hot tips for them as they you know, get going?
Sure. Yeah. So just before release, I threw together I don't even know what these are called, create dash thing, whatever, like the NPM thing. So you can just do npm init wmr and then the name of a folder to create, and it will do all the work for you. You can pass it ESLint if you want that ESLint config there. There's not really anything to add to get started with that. It ships with TypeScript support, CSS modules support, and you're getting HTTP2 and a production server that is highly optimized out of the box. So that npx command should pretty much get you to a fully working setup that you could then deploy to prod.
Nice.
And there's a GitHub that has all this in the README. So you can go to github.com/preact.js/WMR. Yeah. And yes, preact.js/WMR.
Can't get the non-JS version.
So that's all we have for today's show. Jason, do you have anything you want to shout out? Where can our users find you?
I guess find
our users,
me on Twitter.
Our listeners.
Yeah. Hey, users. If you like the software, try my other freebies.
I think I'm just traumatized for life.
You're writing an end user license agreement in your head.
Yeah.
If you like this podcast, feel free to sign my EULA and go to twitter.com/_develop it, which is a security measure. Yeah.
So develop it is the place you can find Jason on Twitter. It's _ develop it. I think, I don't know, developit with an underscore at the beginning. I think it's necessary to spell things out. You know, I'm a child of immigrants, and I'm constantly spelling out words that seem like straightforward to me, but they're really not. And we have users from all around the world.
Hello,
I'm so sorry about that. And I also want to say thank you to our sponsor again at the end. Again, that is OutSystems. Getting started with OutSystems is easy. You can sign up for your own free personal environment, and you'll have your first app built in no time at outsyste.ms/toolsday, which looks like OutSystems on the .ms/toolsday. .ms, what was that again?
Montserrat.
Montserrat. I'm probably pronouncing it wrong.
Hold the main for a font. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Jason. Again, find him on Twitter, twitter.com/_develop it, and on GitHub and on all the places. Check out WMR. You can go to github.com/prac.js/WMR, or you can use MPX to get started with WMR locally, or just, you know, NPM and start a new project and like build your life on it. I built my most recent project on it, and I felt like it was very nice. It felt like a lightweight experience. That is the way that I will describe it. It felt non-fussy.
Non-fussy. Yes.
So if you like this show, please give us a like, a thumbs up, 5 stars on whatever podcasting app you're listening to.
Hit the bell.
I think I'm on too many platforms.
Users love this podcast.
I'm losing it. It's December of 2020. Why are we still here? Anyway, thanks again for listening. I'm Yuna, and I'll catch you next time. Bye, everyone.
Bye.